litter.
It's done.
Today is Wednesday, December 12th, 2007. I am H.F. Williamson. I'm interviewing Perry Rannenbarger for the Veterans History Project of the Library of Congress, American Folklife Center. We are at Studio X in Campbell Hall on the campus in Urbana, Illinois. Jack Mark is the Director of Lighting, Sound, and Camera. I'd like you to start by telling me where you were prior to going into service and what you were doing and how you came to be drafted.
I was living with my folks in Saybrook, Illinois, and doing a farm there. And I bought a tractor and rented some more land when I graduated from high school. And I farmed about 2 or 3 years, something like that. And as far as the draft goes, I've got a few thoughts about that, but it's all over now, so what the heck. But it seems as though they started, evidently, to do it alphabetically, because I had two guys there with me at the same time, and one of them's name was Bruce and the other's name was Baker. And then for some unknown reason they skipped to Rannenbarger. I thought, oh, they want to get rid of me. And they tried, but they couldn't make it.
Well, I'm glad.
How's that?
So you were, yes, which branch
I, was? I went the whole course and got back home again.
Well, let's talk about that whole course in our interview today.
Yeah.
Which branch were you drafted into?
Which what?
Which branch of the service were you drafted into?
I was in the infantry. I was a rifleman.
This was with the Illinois National Guard?
It's Illinois National Guard, yes. We went to Chicago, and there's where I was sworn in. From there, I went to Camp Grant.
Where was that located?
Around Rockford, Illinois, up there by Rockford. That's right, it isn't there anymore, is it?
I don't think so.
No, it isn't.
So that's where basic training occurred?
No. We went to Camp Forest, Tennessee for a basic training. And that's over there between Nashville and Chattanooga. I don't know whether it's there anymore or not either. I'm not sure. But anyhow, it's way down. I went to, that's where it all happened, the basic training. And thank God for that, because it all happened early enough in the game that I got my full basic training, and we got summer spent on maneuvers in Arkansas and Louisiana. And that was a lot of help, I found out, after it was all over. But I'm sure glad I got it.
Were some of the troops that you served with later not able to have such a long basic training?
Oh, yes. Yes, a lot of the guys were really green when we got them. That they was, had to have replacements because a lot of the people that started out with me are gone. They either got sick or got shot, one or the other.
Well, we'll talk about that as we go through your experiences on the Pacific Theater.
Yeah.
So you were able to take the basic training and then the maneuvers that you mentioned,
yes,
in Arkansas and Louisiana. Uh-huh. What was the next step?
The next step was we went back. By the way, I don't know whether it has any bearing on it or not, but I was in the 131st Regiment of the Illinois National Guard. Let's say all the non-coms that gave me the training were out of Chicago. And after I got that done, and after we had the maneuvers, and then we were out playing around on a weekend pass, and what happened? The Japs bombed Pearl Harbor. So we didn't know what to do. I thought maybe we'd better get back to camp. So we went back, and we were then transferred to 132nd Regiment. And what they were doing, they were getting a task force ready to go to the Pacific. We didn't know it at first what was going on, but we just figured, you know, they're getting rid of some of their chaff, heading, and that's about them. They transferred some of us over to 132nd, and next thing we know, we're bound for New York City, and they got on the ship there, which was a Santa Rosa of luxury liner for the Cunard line, and they had changed it over to a troop ship. Well, yeah, it was a nice ride.
What was the destination?
Our destination? Well, we didn't know what our destination was. We went through the Panama Canal, and then we began to put two and two together, and it's our destination must be the Pacific, because the Japs were over there in the meantime while we were doing this. They were taking island after island. They were moving in here and there, and we didn't know where they were going to move next, but we knew where we were going. We got, finally, Australia was our port we were headed for. And in about 30 days, we got there. We zigzagged across the ocean all the way. And we had one submarine scare, I think is about all. And that was very interesting, too, to see those destroyers go into action. It was really beautiful. That they sank the sub all right. Oh, we never saw it, but they did. And so we went on then over. We got to Melbourne.
So you basically went directly from New York.
Yeah.
To Melbourne with just a few stops to
right.
to get fuel or whatever. Wow.
So we no more than got there till the Japs started flying over, and they decided we better get these guys off and get these ships out of here. So what they did was unload us and put us in a park overnight. We spent the night there, but the Japs never did bother us again. I don't know what they were doing, what they were up to, but they didn't bother us any. And the next day we got on the train and went to Ballarat. There's where we got in the home of these people. And
the entire regiment was being housed?
Well, yeah, the entire, whoever was on the ship, it was a whole regiment, yeah, that's 132nd. And we were then known, they said, as Task Force 6814. Right. And that was took us all over the place. But we had all kinds of generals. This there is generals, and some of them weren't even generals. They were colonels. And it was all, you know, helter skelter, because we weren't prepared for this. Anyway, this was a rush job they did on us to get us over there. Because the Japs were taken here and there, and we wanted to get them stopped. So we went back to where we went to Ballarat. We went over there, just to get out of the way from the port, because they figured that the Japs might come down and bomb port like they did Pearl Harbor.
Right.
But they never did it. But we stayed about 2 weeks, I think it was, something like that, in Ballarat. And we trained for this and that and the other thing, anything to keep us busy in the park. And at night we'd go and live with the family. And that was before it did. The family were very nice people, and to my surprise, they lived about like we did, very much the same. And the father was a man who had been wounded in the Boer War, and he lived on a pension, and his wife, and a 14-year-old daughter. That's well, they took us in, and we talked, and we talked, and we had a wonderful time there. They were really nice. So then we got back on the ship again and went to New Caledonia. In New Caledonia, they thought maybe that they would show up over there, but they didn't. They got busy with we were in Caledonia about a year, and we dug foxholes, and we guarding a place, every port or anything that even looked like a port. We were around there guarding, and in case they did come. And then we had the Navy had the Coral Sea Battle, which everybody, I think, is more or less familiar with. And that battle determined who was going to have supremacy over the South Pacific area. And it was us. We won it. We took a terrible beating, but they won it. The Navy did their job there. And after that, then things began to open up. Now, meanwhile, there were Marines in Guadalcanal, and they were just more or less isolated. They were kind of living on their own. Shipping was no place, and it was really tough for them. I thought, I didn't have a feeling of how those guys must have felt. They had no support whatsoever. They were in there at Guadalcanal at Penderson Field, and they were getting bombed out, and they had Japs already on the island before they even got there. And started moving our outfit then.
So you, if I could just ask, so you had a year of training in New Caledonia. That must have been very helpful to have such a long time to get prepared.
Well, not really. We didn't do much. We just stood guard and fed the mosquitoes. Oh, man. That was a terrible place.
Were there any troops, such as the local Australian troops, who had experience fighting on the islands that could help you get a feel for what was going to go on? Or
They had some natives there, natives that did odd work, odd jobs, and they helped us out quite a bit. And they were friendly. They were, New Caledonia is a French island. And they spoke English and everything else. And it was kind of, like a vacation being there even. And after the year there and the Coral Sea Battle, well, then things began to move. And we were loaded on the ship again, and we headed for Guadalcanal. And our task there was clean them all off of the island, get them all. That was what our task was. And we landed down there by Henderson Field, where the Marines were. And after we got situated, the Marines all took off. And they sure deserved it. They deserved to be relieved. And we had then, mostly it was up to us. So we had, there was just more than our regiment. They called it the 2nd Battalion. Whatever that means, I don't really know. But we're the ones that were assigned the job of doing that. And we started out by taking Hill 27. That was known as Mount Austin. It was in the Mount Austin area. And that was very important because that was our first step. And we learned there a little bit about battle. And I got a battle star from there.
Now, at this time, are you an infantryman, or what weapon are you assigned to?
What's that?
Are you carrying a rifle, or are you with a machine?
Yes, I'm still a rifleman.
So you're an infantryman, a rifleman.
I'm still a rifleman. And we were a lead. We went around behind the hill and went up from the backside so the Japs couldn't tell what we were doing, because they had a group of them down there below that hill. But see, there were several hills there, but they were down in there, and that was their main camp area where the biggest part of them were. We went around behind that hill and went up in single file. It was so through the jungle. Single file was the only way we could go. Our company was in the lead. And we got up on the hill all right, but they had snipers posted around there. The snipers started in on us, and they got one here and there. And after that, the guys down below, the Japs down below, they got word of what was going on. So they started sending up waves of men to get us out of there. They didn't want us on that hill, because it was a strategic position. And this all happened in one day. It seemed like it was forever, but it all happened one day. They sent up several waves, and I fired all my ammunition practically, and threw all my grenades, but we held the hill. That was an important thing we did. And we took some losses on that maneuver, too. That was the worst part of it. I said, you can't get much worse than that, I don't think.
I can understand.
Unless you would have to go to Iraq. I think that's the worst thing that ever happened. That was terrible, at the Iraq thing. I feel sorry for those guys that had to live through that.
I can understand that, too.
Returning
to the hill, so you maintained control of the hill and were reinforced, or?
Yeah, we maintained the hill, and they had other forces there that they had moved in too. Since then, they moved them in. We didn't know about them. We thought we were the only ones there, but we weren't. So they engaged the Japs and kept them busy. And One of the most important things, and I still don't understand how it happened, but they were sending up all these waves, and finally they began to kind of peter out. They didn't have enough men to do it anymore, but they were under a thing about as bad as we were, or even worse, I think, because they were sent up there with the opinion that they were taking the hill back or they would die. They were never going to give up. And we had very few prisoners taken there. And as a matter of fact, I don't think we had any taken on that maneuver, as far as I'm concerned. And so these other regiments are... There was two of them over there. One of them was from North Dakota, and the other one was from, I was thinking of maybe where it was from. But they were regular Army, and they were pretty good. And they, my opinion is that they... generals that were doing the plotting the maneuvers were regular Army too, most of them were, and they figured that, well, those guys don't, they're the National Guard, they don't know how to fight. So they made those other guys do most of the same. And that was another advantage I had that I didn't know about back then. So it just went on and for a while, and we did maneuvers, and or not maneuvers, we did scouting. We made scouting parties. We went out about every day. I found out that they needed a radio man, and I was kind of a nut for radio. You sent in radio, and I'd be there. So I'll volunteer, you know, and go ahead, take the radio on the maneuvers. And what happened was that dawned on me shortly after that I was going out with other companies, you know. I said, hey, this is double jeopardy. I can't do this. And I don't know how I got out of it, or whether the sergeant, my sergeant, he may have gotten me out of it. But anyhow, I got out of it. And I didn't run the radio anymore.
So when you went out on a scouting party, what were you, how far ahead of the lines were you going?
We were just going out for information, to find out what was going on with the Japanese, and or how you get here, or how you get there, or things like that. And we had an interesting thing happen. There was one party, we went way, the Japs were all the way around the coast, you know. They didn't go back in. I don't know why they didn't, but they didn't. And we went back in on a scouting party, and we found out what was. All the natives were back. They all went back into the interior, in the jungle, deep jungle. And we went back through there and run across to Machias, and oh, they were glad to see us. And they climbed up this trees and knocked down coconuts and chopped the ends off and said, have a drink. we had some natives there that the other outfits, I mean, must have had them, and they we didn't know about them. That was one thing that I don't understand how it happened, but it seemed like we knew very little. And we thought that we were the only ones there. That gave the feeling we had. But There were others there, too. Like I said, these other two regiments were there from regular Army, and we had one Marine regiment they sent in after the Coral Sea battle. And they sent in a new Marine regiment, and they used them to help on the coast get the Japs taken care of. And we had things pretty well in hand, and they decided, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take some guys and run them around on the water and land them up there by Lunga Point. And so I was one of the guys that got to take that trip. And you think about being scared. I don't know. I wasn't scared. You get beyond scared. You get to where you're kind of numb. You just do what you have to do, and that's it. That we were on this landing boat, and it was just full of all they could put on it. There were several of us that did it, too. They had several boats there, and we went around. But on the way around, there was a Jap plane come over. And, boy, you know, you feel like, well, if he wanted to strafe us, he could do it. He could have done anything he wanted to, but he didn't. He was just out looking for information, I guess, is what it was, because he didn't attack us. And we got up to Lunga Point, and they said, well, you can't land here. There's too many Japs there. So we went around a little farther, and then we landed. And that's where the thing came about. Was we were going to put a pincers on them. The other outfits were coming up from the front side, and we were coming around from the back side, and we were going to, and your back side, you know, and those maneuvers is always your weak side, it seemed like. It was always, you can't cover it very well because it takes all the men you got in the front. Take care of things up there. And so we got up there and got landed and everything. We walked all day. We got up on a hill, top of the hill there, and that was where we were supposed to be. We got there on time and everything, and come the dark, we thought, artillery started to cover us by firing it volleys over, and it was landing so close that we were afraid they were going to wipe us out. But then nobody ever got hit. It wasn't as close as we thought it was, I guess. So they did their job very well, and I'm trying to get a hold of somebody on the radio and couldn't get anybody, nobody on there. Those radios were strange. It was kind of like CB radios. They got they had a limited distance that they would travel, and we were too far out. We couldn't contact anybody again. So anyway, that may have been how my radio experience wound up. I didn't have it anymore after that. But there wasn't any need for it anymore after that, because that night they started to evacuate the Japanese down below. And they got, I think it was, oh, like 1,800 of them out of there or something. They really cleaned the place up pretty well. And we went down the next morning, and there was nothing left there but sick and dead people, and dead Japs. I mean, we didn't have a battle there at all, unfortunately. That was another lucky break I had. It seemed like I've been taken care of pretty well somehow, because I had two lucky breaks. And that we did it. They met up with the other outfit, and that was the end of the war on Guadalcanal. It was all over.
At that time, the island was secured?
Yes, the island was secured.
How many days had you been on the island, roughly?
What?
How long had you been on the island, approximately?
Oh, I don't know. We've been there 6 months, I think, or something like that. That's probably about what it was, about 6 months. And they kept us busy most of the time. Our mission was accomplished as far as that was concerned. It did. That also cleared things out there. So in the meantime, the Japs were having trouble with their other islands, their people on their other islands around there. They were getting a little low on troops themselves, and their supplies were very limited because they didn't have a navy supremacy anymore over the seas. It was ours, you know. After that battle, it was ours, well, ours. And we could get along pretty good. I thought that they had submarines out there, but I don't know for sure. I never saw any, or I never heard any more about it. But anyhow, that was the end of it, as far as I'm concerned. So they sent us back to Fiji Island for rest and rehabilitation. And while I was there, I came down with malaria. And that was another lucky break for me. As a matter of fact, I think it probably saved my life, because afterwards, I found out. I didn't know then what was going on, but afterwards, my son got a couple of books for me, and one of them was a book, I don't know who wrote it, but it was Orchids in the Mud. People have evidently, he works for the university, and he found out where he could get a hold of stuff like that. And another one was Under the Southern Cross. And that's how we got our name eventually. We called Maricopa Division. And they had Southern Cross for a shoulder, big old shoulder patch. Oh, I never wore that, I don't know. But they sent me back with malaria and to Fiji, and they decided while I was there, I just as well send him back home. He'd been over here too long, I guess, or something. So they transferred me to a field artillery outfit, and I never had anything to do with them. I just rode back to San Francisco. I had to do guard duty on a bunch of nuts. They were our own people, but they were guys that were out of the guardhouse. They were sending them home too, so they had it made too, as well as I did. Now, I got back to San Francisco, and I went home on. I think it was 2 weeks furlough. It was pretty nice. And after that was over, I went to Fort Bliss, Texas, El Paso, Texas. And that turned out to be a pretty nice thing, too. But I was office boy for a civilian who ran the medium maintenance on trucks shop. He ran the medium maintenance shops. And he says, yeah, I can use an office boy. I'll take him. That was nice, because he was a civilian, and he never told me to do anything. He asked me, he said, would you like to do this, or will you do this? He was a wonderful person. He was an Irishman, and it cuts the Mexicans upside down the other. You know, they had a lot of Mexicans working there in the shop. But
this was on
he thought, oh, he's a rough guy, you know, but he was a real nice guy. Outside of that, his experience with the Mexicans, he knew you had to do. They start playing. You didn't keep right on them. They start playing around. Those darn guys, they didn't care, you know.
Now, this was on Fort Bliss?
This was on Fort
Bliss.
You were
in the motor pool? Yeah.
Well, I was there 6 months. And I think it was about 6 months. And next thing I know, we're assembling a bunch of guys to go to France. And I'm in it. And I thought, oh, I don't want to go to France. Why would I want to go to France? There was no real danger involved because the Battle of the Bulge was a very important battle over there, and the Germans almost broke out, and they took everything that they had, every man they could get up there to the front in order to contain them, and they did. They got them contained. And they sent us over to replace these guys. That's how I got to go to France.
So this was in 1945, right towards the end of 19...
Yeah, that was 1945. Because I came home from there, went right to a camp in Wisconsin, Camp McCoy, Wisconsin, and was discharged.
How long were you in France?
How long? I don't know. I probably, 4 months, I guess, something like that. I got out in October of 1945. That's when I got out.
So were you in France when the war ended?
I was in France when both wars ended.
That's exciting.
And everybody was dancing on the street, I'll tell you. They were happy over there in France. And that was a great thing.
Earlier you mentioned that in the books that you had been, that your son found, you found out what happened to the AmeriCal division after you left with malaria? Did you?
Oh, yes. They went all the way to Japan. Bougainville, and I don't know what else, but Bougainville was their biggest battle after that. And they got pretty well wiped out. And they got replacements, of course, and they went on and they did some guard duty and what do they call it?
Occupation
forces in Japan. Yeah, well, what happened after that, I don't know.
But as far as you could tell, many of the men that you served with on Guadalcanal may have gone through some of the worst battles in the rest of the Pacific.
Yes, we had some of them did it. And they wound up over there, but I'd been over there 3 years in the island, And they figured that was long enough, because they gave us numbers somehow. I don't know what they based it on. I had a top number. I was, and believe it or not, when my number came up, I went. That's what they did. There wasn't any argument about it. And I was ready to go. I was ready to go somewhere. I didn't care where I went. I wasn't homesick or anything like that. So I went back to Saybrook, and I married this girl, and we was going to start having a family, because my aunts and uncles that didn't have any children has pointed a finger at me and said, "You're going to have to carry the name on." So that's how that happened. Now I thought, well, let's get on with it. And we couldn't live with the folks anymore. The place was too small for some reason or other. So we moved out, and I got a job at Chevrolet Garage in Rantoul, and worked there 4 years, and I got left there, came here to Champaign, and I worked at Sullivan Chevrolet in Champaign for 4 more years. Well, in the meantime, I got the feeling this was not for me, being a mechanic. I did it. I started out and did the whole business, overhauled the car completely, and I said, yeah, I don't want any more of this. So I took a home study course in television and went to work at a television shop here in Champaign, and worked there for 22 years.
It was a timely time, good time to start in television, right at that period, yes.
Yeah, that's when I started. I was radio. I started in radio.
Right.
And television started coming in, and they sold televisions of all kinds. They really sold them. And we had a Klaus and Bury was our wholesale supplier, and he did something the boss didn't like, so we changed, and they started selling Venus then, and we sold Venus, we sold a lot of them. Boy, they were the best then, and that's back to where my story was, that I worked 22 years as a television repairman. And then I sensed that the boss was gonna want to retire. He was a little older than I was, and he was getting ready to retire. He'd had enough of it too. And so I shopped around and got the job working Sears and Roebuck. I said, see it out here at the mall, you know. They were just, that mall was pretty new then. And I thought, yeah, that'd be a nice place to work. I went over there, and I got a job there. And I worked there for 7 years. Well, I was ready to retire then. I retired a year early, and now here I am. I get the 20 years retirement. And the time is going so fast, I could probably put in 20 more if nothing happens. That's about the sign. That's it.
Well, I was thinking about the fact that your aunts and uncles had that high expectation. I'm glad that you were so lucky, so often. Yeah. Any other thoughts about those years in the service when you think back to that period that you might want to share with us?
Oh, we went to Missouri. I retired here. We went to Missouri, and I decided that probably where I wanted to go. So we made a couple of trips down there to scout the place out, you know, and I decided where I wanted to go. I marked the place on the map, and I said, it's in that area somewhere. And we went down and scouted that out, and I guess that looked pretty good. We made right away arrangements to go down there. I bought an old used truck, and we just loaded up and moved on down, and the boys helped me get moved and everything. We spent 15 or 16 years down there in retirement. And we had some wonderful friends down there, too. Not a lot of them, but we had a lot. I've had some that were really nice. And then I had a stroke in October in 1997. And that put me out of business for a little bit. And I decided that we better get back to Illinois. Yes, yeah, good old Illinois. And boys came down again and loaded us up and hauled us back. And at the end, I decided to get champagne for me. I worked here longer than any place I'd been. And I thought that, you know, I would just kind of adopt this for my hometown if they'll have me. And I guess they'll have me. I haven't had any objections to it anyway.
So, I'm sure your family, they live here, are glad you moved back as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's been a wonderful place. Yeah, influence of the university and everything.
I want to thank you for sharing your experiences with us. And
yeah.
Is there any other experience from your time in the Army or on the islands that you have thought of that you might want to mention or comment on?
No, I think that's about all there is to it. That hairy trip we had from New York to Melbourne, Australia. First time I'd ever been on the water, and probably will be the last. But it was real nice.
Did you wonder why they had sent you to New York in order to go to the Pacific Theater and not sent you to San Francisco first? That sounds kind of going the wrong way.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? I don't know. I really don't know.
Well, you got to see the Panama Canal as a result of that.
Yeah.
That was nice.
We did. It was nice. Yeah. We stopped there and took on water. And we didn't get off the ship, but we got to see the whole thing, the locks and everything. It's unbelievable, those locks.
Well, again, I'd like to thank you and your wife for joining us today for this interview. I've been fascinated to hear your story, and I'm so pleased that you were lucky and probably as skillful as you were and came back. Thank you.
I'm bored with all these, yeah.
What?
I think we're done.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.